So I can I presume everybody understands English here. How many of you do not understand English? Okay. How many of you understand English? Please raise your hand. Okay. And তোমরা কে কে ইংরেজি বুঝতে পারবে না, বাংলায় বলার দরকার আছে? Okay, very good. So I can speak in English and there is no need for translation in Bengali. Right? Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So how many of you are coming to this temple regularly for some time? Please raise your hands. And how many of you are living here in this temple? Okay, so all together, how many of you are involved in Krishna consciousness? Very good. So what is Krishna consciousness? This institution, our institution is known as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Srila Prabhupada established this institution in 1966 in New York in a small little storefront in 26 Second Avenue. When Srila Prabhupada just arrived in America, Srila Prabhupada came to America in September 65, and in 66 Srila Prabhupada established ISKCON. So naturally the institution was very, very small. Srila Prabhupada had only just a handful of followers. But Srila Prabhupada, although he was starting this society in a small little storefront in New York City, Srila Prabhupada, while registering the company, registering the institution, Prabhupada named it as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. That was about 50 years ago. Almost 48 years ago. So 48 years ago, how big was this society? Just a small storefront in New York. But Prabhupada named it, while registering, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Mind you, a small little storefront, and Prabhupada is calling it International Society. Anyway, the lawyer who was registering the company, he didn't mind that. But he had some reservation about Prabhupada calling it International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And he suggested that instead of calling it Krishna Consciousness, rather call it International Society for God Consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada's followers, American, young American boys and girls, also felt that yes, probably it will be better to call it the International Society for God Consciousness. And their point was, who will understand who is Krishna? But Prabhupada was adamant. He said, no, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And then Srila Prabhupada pointed out that I have come here to make everybody understand that Krishna is God. People believe in God. Most of the people in this world believe in God, but they don't have any understanding who God is. They have a very, very vague concept, and most of the times they have a total misconception about God. Nowadays it has become a common fashion to identify some ordinary human being as God. Bhagavan this, Bhagavan that. But Prabhupada pointed out that he came here to make everybody understand that Krishna is God. Or in other words, Prabhupada came to make us understand, make everybody understand who God is in reality. And that is what this institution actually stands for. We make them understand who God is and become conscious about God. Not just accept God, but understand who He is and recognize our relationship with Him. That is what this institution stands for. And we are seeing that in 50 years time, 48 years time, in the short span of 48 years time, this movement has grown to such an incredible extent all over the world. It's the intelligent class of people who are accepting it. Those who are sincere seekers, they are getting the answer. They are finding the way. Now, is it just a sentimental claim that we are making? Because we are followers of Krishna, therefore we are saying Krishna is God? No. Srila Prabhupada very emphatically, scientifically established who God is. Not that just Krishna is God, but who God is. The first thing that Srila Prabhupada pointed out, the first thing that Prabhupada dealt with while presenting his teachings, that is God a person or it is an impersonal concept? God is person. Therefore Srila Prabhupada established that concept of God as the supreme personality of Godhead. He didn't just say God. To define who God is, Prabhupada is making that point. The supreme personality, God is a person. And he is the supreme person. Supreme means no one is equal to him or no one is superior to him. That is God, the real God. Supreme personality of God. Can anybody claim that he is God? No. But Krishna can. How do we know? The informations are there in the scriptures. The scriptures are the authoritative literatures where information about him has been presented. The scriptures, the Vedas are not written by some ordinary human beings. Vedas are the wisdom, the knowledge that's coming from the spiritual sky. So that takes us to another dimension. Beyond this material nature, there is another reality, the spiritual reality. This world is there that we are perceiving with our senses, but beyond this, there is another reality. That is spiritual reality. That is beyond our sense perception. That reality is beyond our sense perception. That reality we cannot approach with our senses. Our senses are material. With this material senses, we can perceive only material things. Even material things we cannot observe with this or perceive with this material senses. Like we know that light, that what you perceive is just between violet and red. That's the range. But there is ultraviolet, beyond violet, and below red. The lights are there, but those lights you cannot see. Sound, we hear, but only we can hear the sonic region of the sound. But there is beyond sound and below sounds, supersonic, subsonic. That cannot be heard with our ears. So this way we can see that how limited our senses are. And the spiritual reality is beyond our senses. This material nature, according to the Vedas, are composed of five elements. Five gross elements: earth, water, fire, air and ether. Out of these five, earth we can see, water we can see, fire we can see, air we cannot see. With our eyes we can see up to fire, right? But air we cannot see. But we can feel the air when it blows. Please, children, either keep the quiet children quiet or take them out. We are discussing a serious thing. So air we cannot feel, we cannot see, but we can feel. But beyond air there is ether. The ether is beyond, even ether is beyond our sense perception. But beyond that, beyond these five elements, there are three subtle elements: mind, intelligence and false ego. We know that mind is there. Can you see the mind? Can you touch the mind? Can you hear the mind? Can you taste the mind? No. So even we can see that the material reality is beyond our sense perception. Mind is beyond our sense perception. Intelligence is beyond our sense perception. False ego is beyond our sense perception. Now beyond that is the soul. The soul, we can see the presence of the soul. We can feel the presence of the soul. Like when the soul is in the body is alive. When the soul leaves the body, what happens to the body? Body is dead. This way you can see the presence of the soul. But can you see the soul? No. So Indriyani param nahur indriyabha param manaha. Beyond our senses is mind. Manoshastu para buddhi. Beyond mind is intelligence. And beyond intelligence is the soul. Parutastu saha. So the soul is non-material. Now, is it just a matter of accepting as a faith or belief? No. It's scientifically proven. The Vedas are scientifically establishing the presence of the soul. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna did it in a very simple way, just through two verses. He is saying that this material nature is composed of Bhinna prakritir ashtada, bhumir apo analo bayu khang mano buddhirevacha ahankara itiyangme bhinna prakritir ashtada. The bhinna prakriti, the separated nature. Krishna is saying that this material nature is his separated energy, inferior energy. Is composed of eight elements. What are those eight elements? Bhumi, apo, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego. But then, aparayamikastannang prakritin vidhi me param. Krishna is saying that this material nature is apara, inferior. Aparayamikastannang prakritin vidhi me param. Beyond this there is a superior energy of mind. And jiva bhutang mahabahu jajedam dharjate jagat. The jiva bhutang, the living entities, the soul, is coming from that superior nature of mind. Now this concept, which Krishna explained or established in just two verses in Bhagavad Gita, has been elaborately explained in a branch of philosophy called Sankhya. In Sankhya, they are analyzing. Sankhya, the word Sankhya means analytical study. The analytical study of the material nature is called Sankhya philosophy. It's a branch of Vedic philosophy. Vedas deal with six branches of philosophy. One of them is Sankhya. Those others five are Purva Mimamsa, Naya, Vaisheshika, then Sankhya, then Yoga, and then finally Uttar Mimamsa, or final conclusion. So what ISKCON is dealing with is the final conclusion, Uttar Mimamsa, Vedanta Sutra. And the natural commentary of Vedanta Sutra is Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada's teachings are based on Srimad Bhagavatam. Mainly two scriptures, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyway, to get into that Sankhya aspect, Sankhya, the analytical study, is they're analyzing the material nature. The material nature is composed of five elements. What are those five elements? Earth, water, fire, air, ether. And we have five senses. Human bodies have five senses. What are those five senses? Ears, no eyes, nose, touch, and tongue. Now, ears interact with ether. Sound is produced. It's due to the interaction between ears and ether that the sound is produced. Then skin interacts with air. Touch is produced. Eyes interact with fire. Form is produced. Tongue interacts with water. Taste is produced. And nose interacts with earth, and smell is produced. So this is how the five objects of the senses are produced due to the interaction between the five senses and the five elements of the material nature. What are those five objects of the senses? Sound, touch, form, taste, and smell. Roop, ras, gandha, shabda, and sparsha. So then they consider that there are five working senses. There are five working senses with which we become active. What are those five working senses? Pad, pani, pad, pani, payu, udar, upastha. Hands and legs, speech, anus, belly, and genitals. So with these five working senses, one becomes active in the material nature. So what did you get? Five elements, five senses, five objects of the senses, and five working senses. Four fives are 20. And then there are three subtle elements. What are those three subtle elements? Mind, intelligence, and false ego. 20 plus 3 is 24, 23. And then they considered the sum total of the ingredients with which this entire material nature has become manifest. That is called Mahatattva. So with these 24 considerations, they analyze the entire material nature. But then they considered that all these 24 are objective in nature. Objective. Now the object cannot exist without the subject. So they are objective, but what is the subject? The subject is I. Just as Krishna in that way pointed out, the aparyam itastannan prakritiṁ viddhi me parāṁ jīva bhūtāṁ mahābāhu jajedāṁ dhārcate jagat. These are objective in nature, but who is sustaining? these objects? Who is the subject? I, the soul. So the 24th consideration, 25th consideration is the soul. And with 24 considerations, the entire material nature had been analyzed. But I or the soul couldn't be found there. Therefore, the soul is not of this nature. The soul is of another nature, another reality, spiritual reality. So this is how the actual Sankha is transcending material nature and coming to the spiritual nature. The I, the soul, is of spiritual nature. But then they consider that I's, Atmas or Jiva Bhutan, Jivatmas are minute and many. We all have our Atmas, soul. We all are Atmas. But we are minute and we are many. So anything that is minute and many must have a source. So who is the source? The Supreme Atma or Param Atma or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. See how wonderful it was. Scientifically it has been established, the identity of the spiritual reality, the spirit soul, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then the question arises that the soul, the spirit souls are the parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, what is the relationship between the part and the whole? The part's existence is relevant to its link with the soul, with the whole. For example, this finger is a part of my body. As long as it is connected to the body, it is very valuable. But when this finger is cut off from the body, then what happens? We just throw it away. It doesn't have any value. So the existence, the value of the part lies in its connection to the whole. The jivatmas are the part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the relevance of his identity, the utility or the value of his identity lies in its connection to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now the question arises, how to re-establish that relationship? And that is actually taking us to the next branch of philosophy, Vedic philosophy, called Yoga. This Yoga has 8 branches, 8 stages or 8 limbs. Therefore it's called Ashtanga Yoga. The 8 branches or 8 stages of Yoga are known as Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Pratyahar, Dhyan, Dharan and Samadhi. Yam, the initial stage, the external purification, the purification of the body. And then the second stage is the purification of the mind, internal purification, Niyam. Then Asan. The body is a vehicle. Literally asan means feet. Seat. The body is a vehicle. If we want to use a vehicle to reach our destination, then the first thing we have to do is learn where to sit and how to use that vehicle, how to drive that vehicle. So the body is a wonderful vehicle to reach our ultimate destination. So in order to utilize the body to reach our goal, we have to learn how to sit in this body. That aspect is asana. Asana is not just some physical gymnastic to get rid of diabetes. Like asana, purpose of asana is much higher. Then comes pranayam, the control of the breathing. Now why control of the breathing? Yoga, chitta vritti nirodha. The purpose of yoga is to stop the activities of the mind. Now, breathing has a close connection to our mind, thinking. When the mind is agitated, how do we breathe?
Quick.
And when the mind is peaceful, how do we breathe?
So
this is how we can see that how our breathing has its connection to the activities of our mind. So what does the yogi do in order to control his mind? He controls his breathing. Now, how many processes the breathing comprise of? Just inhaling and exhaling? No, the yoga is saying there is a third aspect of breathing. What is the third aspect of breathing? It's called kumbhaka, retaining. Rechaka, puraka and kumbhaka. Exhaling, inhaling and retaining the life air. So yogi practices to retain the life air. If you go to Kumbh Mela in India, you'll find some yogis show their yoga tricks. A few years back, I remember I was in Haridwar Kumbh Mela, and there was one yogi called Pilot Baba. And he was burying himself. They put him in a trunk, locked it up, and lowered the trunk in a pit, and then covered up the pit with soil. And he stayed there for 3 days. How could he do that? How could one stay under the ground for 3 days? Because he stopped breathing. If you don't breathe, then you can stay there for a long, long time. Underground. You don't need air to breathe. So this is how, even you can see the demonstration. In India, this kind of demonstration are quite common. I remember a long time back when I was staying at my father's place. One day, near the bus stand, I saw there was some crowd. And I peeped in, I saw that one body, the body was not of a, we could see one body, just the legs are sticking out and the whole body has been buried underground. And from the shape and the size of the feet, I could see that it was actually young, quite a young person's body. Anyway, I just saw it and then I left. When I came back, after a few hours, I still saw the crowd there and I saw the still the with two legs were sticking out. I mean, so this is how a yogi learns how to stop breathing through the process of kumbhaka. But the purpose of kumbhaka is not just to display some magical feats like that, but to control the mind. Then when one accomplishes this pranayama, then he becomes eligible to the fifth stage of yoga, which is known as pratyahar. Pratyahar means withdrawal. Withdrawing the senses from the objects of the senses. Pratyahar. And then comes dhyan or meditation. Meditation is not a matter of just closing your eyes for 15 minutes in a yoga studio in New York City or in New Orleans. It's pratyahar, completely withdrawing the senses from the objects of the senses. And then only one becomes eligible to meditate. Meditate means project his consciousness internally. Completely withdrawing his senses from the external perceptions and project it internally to the core of the heart where the Lord is situated as the super soul. When the fixing of the mind becomes accomplished, then that is called dharan. And then perception of the Lord in the heart is the stage of samadhi. trance. One sees the Lord in the heart. So that is the final stage of yoga. The perfection of yoga is to see the Lord in the heart. But what happens then? When a minute soul, spirit soul, sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when a small person comes across a big person, great person, what happens? Doesn't his head automatically bend down in respect and he surrenders? So the ultimate perfection of yoga leads to this surrender, which is known as prapatti or sharanagati, surrender. And this sharanagati or surrender is the beginning of devotional service. When you surrender to the Lord, then you start to function for the sake of His pleasure. And that is called loving devotional service. And that aspect has been established through the Vedanta Sutra. So the sixth branch of Vedic philosophy is Vedanta. Karma Mimamsa or Purva Mimamsa, Naya, Vaisheshika, Sankhya, Yoga and Uttar Mimamsa. Uttar Mimamsa is final conclusion. So this Uttar Mimamsa is the Vedanta and the elaboration or the natural commentary of Vedanta in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrendering unto Him as the ultimate goal of life. And that is what Srila Prabhupada is presenting through his International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It is not just some sentimental claim. Prabhupada himself used to tell us, don't just accept it because I am saying it. You ask if you have any question. Try to understand it. It's not a faith. Krishna consciousness or what Srila Prabhupada was presenting is not just a faith. It is a science. Science in the sense is a proper understanding of a subject in an authentic way. That is what science is. So what is the definition of science? Experimentally verified facts. So is it just faith or it can be experimentally verified? What Krishna consciousness can be experimentally verified. It is a systematic study of a subject that can be tangibly or experimentally established or verified. So that is what it stands for, and that's why intelligent class of people all over the world are accepting this process. Whoever sincerely probes into this topic cannot help but accept it. Remember when Srila Prabhupada came here, hardly any Indian actually came to Srila Prabhupada at that time. It was all young American boys and girls who actually came to Srila Prabhupada, who did not have any connection or any inclination towards the Vedic culture or Indian culture. Why did they accept Srila Prabhupada's teachings? Because they saw that what Prabhupada was saying is make sense. It's real, it's factual. And that's why they accepted. They not only accepted that, they completely committed themselves to this process. So much so that the young boys and girls went to different parts of the world carrying Srila Prabhupada's message and establishing this movement in different corners of the world. You're from South Africa. You know how it started in South Africa?
Yes,
Maharaj. No. It was a young American called Kshudi Prabhu. Pato Maharaj came much afterwards. A young 18-year-old boy, Kshudi Prabhu, he went to South Africa. A young 18-year-old boy. Didn't know anybody in South Africa. Actually what happened is, he saw, he was in Mayapur at that time, he saw that different devotees have gone to different places and started Krishna consciousness movement there. And he saw the map of the world and he saw that all the places have been taken over. Everywhere Krishna consciousness has been established. America, Europe, Australia. He saw that Africa is the place where it didn't reach. So he approached Srila Prabhupada and he told him, he expressed his desire to go there. And he went. And Prabhupada of course also sent one sannyasi also to go with him. So together they went. And fortunately on the flight to South Africa, they came across two Indians who invited them to come and stay there with them. So that's how it started. How did it start in England? Three young couples, grihasthas, not even sannyasis or brahmachari, three young couples went there. Didn't have any money, didn't know anybody there. And they started it. Who are they? Shamsundar Prabhu, Mukunda Maharaj and Guru Das Prabhu and their wives. Malati Mataji, Jamuna Mataji and Janaki Mataji. So six young boys and girls went to England, started it. And who came? George Harrison became attracted. They struggled for a long time. They couldn't make any headway. They were staying with some Indians, but those Indians were also not interested in Krishna consciousness. But then they met George Harrison, and George Harrison became interested. So this is how this movement spread. When it started to spread in England, and then Prabhupada sent Tamalkrishna Maharaj there. And Tamalkrishna Maharaj went first to England, then France, Germany. Then finally India. Prabhupada sent his America, and he named them as his dancing white elephants. Indians were not interested in Krishna consciousness, but when they saw that the Americans are taking to Krishna consciousness, they started to express their interest. And today we are seeing that how the Indians are responding so nicely all over. There was a time when it was all Americans and Europeans and no Indians. Now it's all Indians and hardly any Americans and Europeans. But I hope that soon a time will come when both Indians and the Westerners will get together and push this movement forward. And that will be the ultimate success of this movement. And then only it will get its actual credibility as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's very important that the local individuals become involved. Then only it will be an international organization. When Srila Prabhupada went to Africa, Nairobi, the devotees brought some important Indians to meet Srila Prabhupada. After meeting with them, when they left, Srila Prabhupada called his devotees and he asked, did I come to Africa to meet the Indians? Where are the Africans? Where are the Africans? So next day they went and got the Africans to come and meet Srila Prabhupada. So similarly, if Prabhupada came here, then Prabhupada would ask, where are the Americans? Did I come to New Orleans to meet the Indians only? It's nice that the Indians are joining. Very nice. And it's also Krishna's arrangement. Krishna placed the Indians in different parts of the world so that they give their support to Krishna consciousness movement and make it spread. But the actual success will lie in the local participation movement. And if we present it properly to them, they will accept it. Because it's not anything, it's not an Indian or Hindu thing or Asian thing. It is universal. Everyone is a spirit soul. And everyone has his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everyone must take this opportunity to re-establish his loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari. Does anybody have any question? Does anybody have any question? Yes?
Can you discuss a little bit the word ahankar?
Ahankar means false ego, mistaken identity. Thinking, instead of recognizing that we are spirit souls, when one thinks that he is his body and mind, and functions on that platform, that is called ahankar.
Can you discuss the
mahatattva? Mahatattva is the basic ingredients that is the cause of everything. All that manifested in this material nature, starting from mind, intelligence and false ego, the ingredient for that is that Mahatattva. Right? Mahatattva is the finest material substance. When Mahavishnu glances towards the material nature, then this Mahatattva becomes manifest or starts to take the shape. First false ego, then intelligence, then mind, and so forth. So this Mahatattva actually becomes affected by modes of material nature due to Mahavishnu's glance. And as a result of the interaction or effect of the mode of goodness on this ahankar, on this Mahatattva, the demigods and the false ego become manifest. Mind becomes manifest. So in this way, due to the mode of passion, the manifestation takes place. So is with the mode of influence of the mode of ignorance. Goodness, passion and ignorance and influence of that in the Mahatattva causes the manifestation of different objects and elements of this material nature. Prakriti. And Mahatattva is a part of the Prakriti. You can say the basic ingredient for creation.
Finest
material. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Any other question? Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Maharaj, can you explain what is the relation between renunciation, knowledge and bhakti, and how we can keep balance in our
renunciation, knowledge and bhakti?
Yeah.
Okay. You see, when you get knowledge that this material nature, what the material nature is like, and your actual identity is spiritual, right? Then that leads to renunciation. Knowledge leads to renunciation. Because when you realize that you do not belong here, then you withdraw yourself from here. That is manifest in the form of renunciation. And then when you renounce and become situated in your spiritual identity, then you become involved in your spiritual activity. And the spiritual activity is bhakti. So this is how knowledge leads to renunciation, and renunciation eventually leads to devotional service. Okay? Huh? Yes?
Prabhupada says that when a soul is trapped within the material world and reaches the form of human being, it's in the unique position to practice devotional service and transcend and break the cycle of death and rebirth. Could you look at the world today and see like the state of the world population and how it's growing exponentially every day? Can you see that as evidence of more and more souls reaching the human state and not being able to transcend?
You see, the number of souls cannot be counted just by counting the human bodies. Like the animals have souls, the trees and plants have souls, right?
Even as an effect of the growing human population, you know, we're killing and destroying more and more animals.
Yeah, you can say that. But the thing is, you see, like the number of souls are so innumerable. Like, can you imagine how many souls you are touching when you are just waving your hand through the air like this? Innumerable souls you are just touching. Right? So that's how inconceivable the souls are. But your point is correct. Like, I mean, okay, human population is increasing. Human population is increasing, but for how long, there is no way of knowing. Because previous ages, especially in the Western world, there used to be massive wars, and that used to destroy a lot of souls. Many people used to die in those wars. But, you know, like for last how many? Almost 80 years, 70 years, there is no war. No, in a large scale, yeah, in the West. Because especially Western world, there hasn't been much loss of living entities. Anyway, sometimes the number increases, sometimes the number decreases. But the consideration is that what Prabhupada is pointing out, that at this age, in this age of Kali, living entities are getting a wonderful opportunity to become free from their material bondage by accepting this process of surrendering to the Lord, which was not so readily available before. So that is the benefit, and that benefit is being offered abundantly in today. Thank you. What's your name?
My name is Elijah. Elijah?
Elijah. Okay, very good. John the Baptist was the Elijah reborn. So you come here often?
Every Sunday.
Wonderful. Are you reading Prabhupada's books?
Yes.
Very good. Wonderful. Okay, thank you all very much. So we can end with a little kirtan. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama.